Welcome to the Hipster Mama Speaks. Once again, I'm Thea Teresa English, and on tonight's episode, I'm going to take a break from discussing parenting and my life as a hipster mom in a multi-generational household. And I'm doing this because I'm trying to show a variety of different topics that I like to discuss, and I'm also a research buff. So not only do I do a lot of this, and a lot of this is based on the work that I do from home. It involves a lot of research. So what I also plan to do a lot more with this podcast is to mix it up a little bit and discuss some of the things that I've been researching for my writing assignments and bring some of that into the podcast. And tonight's episode is one example of that. So earlier, I was working on an article that dealt with predatory lending, and particularly in low-income areas. And so for the rest of the episode tonight, I'm going to talk about predatory lending, some of the dangers of it. And in a second segment, I'm going to divide it up in two segments. The first segment, which is this segment, we're going to discuss some of the dangers of it and examples of predatory lending, some of the studies that have been done about it. And so all about just the dangers of predatory lending and the different forms in which it shows up in particular in low-income communities. And the second segment, I'm going to discuss how we can break free from forever having to need that kind of lending, to ways that we can keep ourselves from having to resort to predatory lending in order to get the funds that we need. So that would be in the second segment, so stay tuned for that. So we're going to get started in this segment with just some basic information about predatory lending. So, and I'm, a lot of this is based on the notes that I've done here. Predatory lending has been a concern for residents living in low-income areas for quite a while, actually, over the past few years, if not past one or two decades. And one such example is payday loans. And for those who are not familiar with payday loans, I'll just give a rundown of how that works. So, for example, you may be facing a financial emergency. For example, your car broke down and you need your car fixed because you need that car to get to and from work or to pick up your kids from school or daycare or whatnot. And so, but the thing about that is, thing about this emergency is you don't get paid for another week. So now you're wondering what to do. And since you might not qualify for a traditional personal loan, you walk around your neighborhood and you see a whole lot of payday loan centers. So you walk in, so you walk inside of a payday loan center. Somebody, guys. So you walk inside of a payday loan center. And you request a loan. So then you give the lender your bank account information and other facts about yourself. And then you will present to them a check. So then you will present to them a check and the amount of the money that you want to that you want the loan to be at. So in other words, if you walk inside of a payday loan center and you want a loan for $300, you will present your check. You'll present a check from your bank account to them in a form of $300. And what's going to happen is they're going to hold on to that check that you wrote out to them for the due date when you have to repay that loan. So that's how the payday loan works. So that's where you get the term payday loan, because they give you the money now, but then you have to repay that loan, and I guess when it gets close to your next pay period. So henceforth, that's where you get the name payday loan. And so once you write out a check and the amount of money that you want to borrow, you give that check to the lender, and as I stated, that lender will hold on to that check. Now they're not gonna cash it; they're gonna hold on to that check because they're gonna need that check to take money out your bank account when it's time for you to repay the payday loan. So once you give them the check and you present other information, such as some information about your employer as well as your bank account information and some other facts about yourself, they will deposit the money that you need into your account. And it usually takes at least about a day, if not maybe 1 to 3 days at the most. But it's pretty quickly that you will get the money that you're borrowing, and you're going to use that money for whatever financial emergency that you might have. So, so, So then the payday lender, so once he deposits the money that you borrow, you're just feeling excited, your financial emergency is over with, and you're just going about your life and everything, and your mind, the problem is solved, and you're thinking, well, I got the payday loan, that wasn't bad, that was quick and easy, I got the money, and then when I get paid again, I'll just repay on the payday loan. And that's it. I'll call it a day. But it's not always that simple. Not when it comes to payday loans. Because the problem comes is that when you're unable to, if you're unable to repay the loan, many payday lenders will roll over this loan, and generally it'll be 14 days or so. They'll sort of give you some time to repay the loan if you can't pay it on the original due date. But then the problem comes is when they attach extra fees. So if you go maybe a month and without repaying this payday loan, not only are you responsible for paying that the loan itself along with the interest rates, which are generally very high with payday loans, you are also paying all of the extra service fees that have incurred on this loan for all of the time that you didn't pay, that you didn't repay on this loan. So when you finally repay the loan altogether, you're paying a very high price just to borrow maybe $200 for an emergency. And this is how many payday lenders prey upon many in low income communities. I grew up in and would be considered a really more not completely low income, but more of between the middle of working class and middle class community, and I would go around my neighborhood and see quite a few payday lenders. They were just about on every other corner, and what I've noticed is that you go in some of the more upper middle class sections or even affluent areas, you won't find as many payday lenders. You're just not going to find that, but you will find that in many low income and work or middle class communities, especially in communities where it's mostly minorities, such as African Americans or and many also in immigrant communities, you will find that, and this is really sad, and some social policy advocates have even mentioned that this kind of lending where you have many payday lenders in certain communities, this is actually a form of redlining. Now, for those who are not familiar with redlining, I'm going to give that definition because that is very common nowadays. But the practice of redlining dates back to even the 60s and 70s. In fact, I was watching some Good Times reruns a few weeks back, and there was an episode in which the character Florida Evans and her children were trying to apply for a loan to buy a home. And it was in a working class community, but then they were denied the loan, and in not so many in not so many not so comp too complicated terms, the lender mentioned that many of the working class communities, such as the community that Florida Evans wanted to live in, were up for urban renewal. Now that's what it was called back then. Nowadays they just call it gentrification is what it's called now. But back then they'll say urban renewal or some other fancy name. But really, it's gentrification. And to in order for them to achieve this gentrification, some redlining had to take place. So now that brings me to the definition of redlining. So redlining would be defined as a practice of denying certain groups of people loans for businesses and homes, and especially in certain neighborhoods within a major city. Now this can happen in smaller towns as well, but this happens a lot in the major cities, and so that is what redlining is. So therefore, this is where many social service advocates, policy advocates, those who advocate on behalf of the poor, who advocate for minorities, they've tend to view payday lending and other types of predatory lending as a form of redlining, and we can see a lot of that. So this whole thing with payday lenders, that is definitely a form of redlining, in my opinion. I wouldn't have to agree with that. But then there's other forms of predatory lending that we don't always think about. And one that comes to mind is the rent-to-own places. Yeah, so the rent-to-own. To me, that is a form of predatory lending too, because so in other words, so you go in there, so they're not going to offer you to buy it outright, but they're going to let you rent it out for maybe a few weeks or even months, depending on what you're renting, and based on what I've been hearing from different people, the interest the prices are just as high with a rent to own. There are all kinds of extra fees that they tack on to, in addition to the actual price of what you're renting, and it's so basically, for the duration of the time that you're renting this, it's just prolonging and prolonging it. And what if the product is damaged? It's just, and then there's another can of worms that gets opened when that happens. And so with renting to own, in my opinion, is to me it, that would qualify as predatory, because they're not selling it outright, but we'll let you borrow it for a little bit, or and then you can keep it for a little while, and then eventually you may or may not own it. And it's just really sad that we have these predatory lending practices. And I think about what it is doing to low income residents. I think about what it's doing to the people in those areas, and it's just so sad. It's really sad, and just to me, it's just so much injustice within this. It's just so much injustice, and it's just, and I just don't like it. That's why I would just advise any person that's in a financial emergency to avoid payday lenders like the plague. Just like a rental, just I would advise them to do the same thing with a rent-to-own place, because these are nothing more than predatory lenders. These are loan sharks, really. That's what they are. They take advantage of the disadvantaged and low-income areas. They don't really care about those that they lend the money to. They charge them very high interest rates. There have been cases where those who struggled to make payments on their payday loans, they would harass the borrowers. They would call the borrower's job many times, or even threaten to put them in collections, and in some cases threaten them with jail or a lawsuit at the least. And it is just. It's just, I just wouldn't advise it for anyone, because with payday loans and rent-to-own places and other types of predatory lending, this hurt. It just hurts you financially. It does not. I understand that it may help you short term, and I guess in that sense there are short term benefits. And it's not to say that it has not helped anybody. I'm sure that it has helped them in the short term. They were relieved of their financial emergencies because of the payday loans. But I just feel that there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way to help those in disadvantaged communities than to just start building a whole bunch of payday loan centers in these communities. Why can't we build more banks and credit unions in these areas? Why do we have to keep building cash advance places? Just places where all they're going to do is take advantage of the residents, and I don't like that at all. And then it goes back to what I mentioned earlier about this is redlining, just plain and simple redlining, and I just don't like this at all. I get a little passionate about this, because I don't like when people are taken advantage of financially in any other way. I don't like that kind of injustice, so I had to do this episode tonight, because it's just something that really gets to me. And it's just the predatory lending practices. It's really bad right now. It really is. And that leads into the next form of predatory lending that my grandmother unfortunately became the victim of, and that is the reverse mortgage. Now, I know you may have seen all kinds of commercials, maybe in your areas, or you may have met with some, maybe a salesperson came to visit you to talk about it, and you may have seen advertisements in newspapers, magazines, online, and you hear this thing about reverse mortgage. You can still stay in your home while still paying for any medical expenses or any other expenses you might have, and so on and so on. And so the way they toot this whole thing with the way they go about this with reverse mortgage, they make it look so wonderful in the way they package it. It's like they're throwing candy at you on TV with that. But there's actually more to that. There's actually a lot more to that as far as the reverse mortgage goes. And I'm going to get into that as well. So I'm going to go back to this. So now I'm going to give you a breakdown of a reverse mortgage. Now, with a reverse mortgage, seniors over age 62 can convert their equity over to cash. And the way they promote this is, as I stated, it is promoted as a way for them to have extra funds while still being able to stay in their homes. Now, this is what they tell everyone. This is what you see in all of the commercials. But the truth is that if the homeowner can't repay on his loan, and should this person pass away, his family will have to either pay up or lose the house. Because at this point, all equity is not, there's hardly any equity in a house anymore if when in a case of a reverse mortgage, because you converted all the equity into cash. Now, some people might convert only part of their equity, while other seniors who get tangled up in a reverse mortgage, they might convert all of their equity into cash. So when you have a situation like that, and now something comes up where now you can't make payments on this mortgage, there's a high chance that you'll be out of a house. The bank can just come and take your home. And to me, that is that's what gets me mad. This whole thing with the reverse mortgage, I really do not like it. I think about what it is doing to senior citizens. So now it's not enough that they use predatory lending practices at those in low income areas, and or they target single mothers, or they target certain groups of people with this. It's not enough for them to do that. It's not enough for them to target you with the allure to lure you in and do a bait and switch with rent to own places. It's not enough for them to do that. They now they want now they go now they're Now what they do now is they go after seniors with another form of predatory lending, but the way they make it sound is like, oh, this is a reverse mortgage, and they promote this everywhere. They promote it so heavily, but really this is nothing more than a scam. This is a trap. This is a trap to keep seniors citizens in debt, to cause them to not have their homes. And this is, to me, this is all a scam. And if you have senior citizens in your family, and they're you it's so I just feel that it would be wise for you to have this talk with them about reverse mortgages and the truth about it. You can educate yourself about the truth. There are many different websites that are actually exposing this for what it is, as a scam. And you can just type in reverse mortgage scam. And I found out about this by doing some research. What I did was I typed in reverse mortgage predatory lending, and once I did that, just a host of results about that. I was just going from site after site, different credible sites about what this really is. This is really sad, and I it's just. The whole thing with this predatory lending, it's so messed up. I think about what happened right before the global recession of 2008 and the years leading up to that. People they people I mean, there were many bank lenders were offering subprime loans. Yeah, so that's another form of predatory lending, subprime loans. And for those who are not familiar with the subprime loans, I'll break that down as well. Now, with a subprime loan, these are the kinds of loans that many lenders would offer to families whose credit score would be fair or even poor. So they would just offer these loans. They would again, they would lure them in by saying, even if you don't have the best credit, even if you may not be able to afford even the down payment, that's okay. You still qualify a loan. You qualify for one. You qualify for a home loan. And they were just giving away these home loans, and knowing that many of the recipients of these loans, there was just a high chance that it would be almost impossible for them to repay these the subprime mortgages. And and once the global recession hit, once things got really bad around, I'll say between 2008, 2000, and I'll say 2010, around that time, when the global recession was just getting started, many people lost their homes, and many of the ones that were hit the hardest were those who were the recipients of subprime mortgages. And I mean, just story after story of people who struggled during that time to lose their home. Some ended up having to put their homes in foreclosure, and this is here, and here that was another result of lenders taking advantage of those who those whose credit wasn't the best, or maybe fair, or like I said, or really really bad, and they just offered them loans anyway. This was a trap, and all the while the lenders were getting rich off of this. I mean, lenders making money off it, just like they're doing now. The payday lenders are making a killing off of the backs of those who were struggling financially, and that is just plain wrong in my opinion. And I hate it. I really do. It's so sad. I think about the families who have to spend all this time trying to get out of debt. They may fall into depression about it. It's the, it's just the fact that, and to me, I feel like a lot of times these lenders get away with it. They get away with hurting entire communities, entire communities with these kinds of practices. And in some cases, you have state governments and some local governments protecting them, and that's what I don't get. That's just what I don't get. I'm putting all this together, and I'm really starting to wonder if there's some larger agenda at hand, which I'm really leaning heavily towards. I'm really starting to believe that, because this goes on just way too much. And I think about what my grandmother's dealing with now because of the reverse mortgage. Even right now, she is in a depressed state. Even right now, she is worried to pieces about the house. It's affecting her health. We're seeing this right now, what it's doing to her health. And I would just advise those who are senior citizens, don't fall for the reverse mortgage trap. It's just a trap. And I understand they'll have you think that this is a way for you to stay in your home while still having cash for either emergencies, or you want to take a vacation, or set up a college fund for the grandkids or great grandkids. But this reverse mortgage is not what you think it is. It's not what you think it is. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, for those who are listening, if you have senior citizens in your family, and they're talking and they're thinking about refinancing, or if they have any discussions pertaining to the mortgage, or any kind of discussions like that, I just urge you to warn them about the reverse mortgages, because they're not really designed to help. In my opinion, it's just it only hurts. It hurts people financially, and it can hurt them emotionally once they find out what's really going on with those. So I'll just urge you to do your research on this, and just learn the truth about reverse mortgage scams, because that's what they are to me. Just like payday loans, just like rent-to-own centers, where you're basically just borrowing. For example, if you want to get a TV, so basically they're gonna let you rent the TV for a little bit, and there's a chance you might own it, or something might come up and you won't be able to make payments, and now you're stuck in debt. Now you're indebted to the rent-to-own company, and these predatory lending practices are hurting entire communities, especially communities where there are minorities there and immigrants, where those who earn modest incomes, and even a, what we consider the traditional middle class, even those families now, more and more of those families are being affected by these kinds of practices. And so that wraps up the recording. And in the second segment, I'm going to talk about ways how we can avoid to have to depend on predatory lending practices such as the ones that I mentioned, and how we can be financially free from that, and how we don't, how we can take back our that financial freedom, and how we don't have to be a slave to that, how we don't have to be a slave to predators like these. And that's going to be for the second segment. And so I'll be back. All right, welcome back. This is the Hipster Mama Speaks. I'm Thea Teresa English. And on the last segment, I discussed some of the dangers of predatory lending and the different forms of it that exist, especially in low-income communities and also in communities where that's populated by minorities and immigrants. And I just discussed just the injustices of it and the dangers of getting tangled up in that kind of lending. So in this segment, I'm going to talk about the ways in which we can avoid having to need it, how we don't have to resort to that kind of lending in order to get our financial needs met. Just and mainly these are just some steps that we can take. Some are short term, then there are those then some of these methods would be good for long term as well. And so one of the first things that'll be very important to so you won't have to need the services of loan sharks like payday lenders is to have an emergency fund. Depending on how often you get paid during the week or every 2 weeks, or I know sometimes with freelancers the income can be irregular because I've had that situation happen. Especially when I first started out as a freelancer, my income wasn't very steady. It would be irregular, so I would have to budget for that kind of income. And that reminds me, I think it would be a good idea to do an episode on how freelancers, especially those who work in the creative sector, who earn irregular incomes, how they can budget their income. So I really should do an episode on that. But getting back to the topic at hand, it's always a good idea to have an emergency fund set up. Now, it doesn't always have to be at a bank. It could be some place in a house where you could just set aside some of your check for emergencies because they do happen. Sometimes, as I mentioned in the last segment, suddenly your car may stop working, or there might be a situation where you may be coming up short for even paying for your child's daycare. If you think about the cost of daycare nowadays, it's so high right now with daycare. So an emergency might come up where you have to pay little extra fees associated with the daycare. You might have to pay for a child's field trip, dealing with school, or it could be a medical emergency that might throw you off base a little bit, but then you don't get paid for another week and a half, and now you're wondering what to do. But we can prepare for that, for those times, by just getting into the habit of saving for emergencies. Even if you're saving $10 or $15 every pay period, it all adds up depending on how consistent you are with saving for an emergency fund. As my grandmother, those around me would say, you want to save up for a rainy day. So, because rain happens. And so for so I would say one of the most important things is to make sure that you have some money saved up for emergencies, because you never know when they'll pop up, and sometimes unexpected expenses occur. And it's always good, and it would be just great if you wouldn't have to if you can just go right to your emergency cash stash, and take the funds out, and you can just skip the payday lenders, and tell them to go sit down somewhere. You don't have to. You can just pass up those payday lenders, and don't have to go to them in order to have your financial needs met. That's a freedom in that. That's a freedom of not having to depend on that, not having to depend on a payday lender to get you through a financial emergency. And one of the best ways to do that is to have an emergency fund on hand. And so that's one of the best ways to avoid payday lenders. Another thing you can do is look into different side hustles in addition to your day job. These days, we are moving heavily towards the gig economy, as they call it. And that reminds me, that's another idea for another episode, the gig economy. Because we're seeing a lot more of freelancers within the gig economy. And it seems like many people are starting
to say goodbye to corporate America. Not all, a good number are still involved in the corporate world, but we are starting to see more and more people saying goodbye to that, and many are choosing to work from home. Some are deciding to do home-based businesses. Others are they're driving Uber or Lyft. They're finding other ways to get their hustle on, and so I feel that one another important way to not have to resort to dependence on payday lenders or any other type of predatory lenders is to have a side hustle going. Now, before you choose the different side hustles, it's always a good idea to think about what your talents are, what you can contribute, your skill set. You do want to think about that when you first start getting into side hustle mode. When you deciding on the different side hustles, there's so many to choose from. But my go-to side hustle has always been freelance writing, and that's how I started out because I was working I had my regular day job, but I wanted to earn extra income for spending change, and nowadays I use it to get things, some extra things, knickknacks for my daughters and clothes for myself, and many times groceries. And so freelance writing is one of my main gigs, but yours doesn't have to be freelance writing. You may decide to drive cars for Uber or Lyft. You might decide to have your own cleaning service where you do housekeeping and organizing for neighbors in your community, or mow the lawn for neighbors. You might decide to do a side hustle that way. Actually, there's a guy in our neighborhood who comes in our who he comes on our block every few I'll say every few weeks or so, and he comes and cuts all everybody's grass from he goes from one house to the next just cutting grass. But he has a regular day job, but his side hustle is cutting the grass for just about everybody on our block, and that's another good side hustle. Also babysitting, if you're a college student or if you just graduated from college, but you're just getting started in your career and you have a day job, which looking for some weekend side hustle work, babysitting is another excellent idea. And there's also a dog walking. Yes, yeah, the dog walking, pet sitting. In fact, a few days ago, I was looking at TV and they had a commercial for Rover, and this app is where and this app it pairs dog walkers with customers who are in need of dog walking services, a dog sitting. Or just pet sitting in general. So you might want to look into that. They're nowadays with which is why everybody, almost everybody, but most people having smartphones now, and so many people downloading all kinds of apps. There's just about an app for a variety of side hustles, and Rover is one such app. But that app is dealing with pet sitting, dog walking, and so if you love pets and you're into doing that, that's a good app to get a side hustle going. Another good side hustle is, now this is one that I don't do very consistently. I need to do a better job on this, but another good side hustle is blogging. Many people have started out blogging as a side hustle, but that became their full-time hustle. That literally replaced their day jobs. They were able to quit their jobs and devote a good deal of their time to blogging, and they turned it into a and it became a profitable business for them. Many moms started off that way. They were looking for a way to stay home with their children while still earning a steady income for themselves and their families. And they turned to blogging, and now we have so many. We have a ton of mommy blogs now, and many of them are successful. So blogging is another way to do it. The thing with blogging is that you have to be very consistent in the blog posts that you put out. You have to get creative about ways to monetize that blog, and based on some of the research that I've done and different videos that I watched from those who are into blogging, who have done a great job with it, they've done affiliate marketing, and they've used that tool for their blogs for good monetization. And with affiliate marketing, what you're doing is you're just promoting other people's products on your blog. So to get started, what you'll do is you'll go to an affiliate service like ClickBank or Amazon affiliates. You can use their services, and basically what you're doing is you're promoting their products on your blog. But I also want to say, but this is not to say that you just promote every single product that they
all these different just start putting all kinds of products and start promoting it on your blog. It's best to promote products from affiliate sites that are in line with what your blog is talking about, to maximize results and to increase chances of customers clicking on those products, and for you to earn a profit for your blog to increase in monetization. It's best to promote affiliate products that are in line with what your blog is all about. For example, if your blog is dealing with helping people create awesome YouTube videos and teaching them about podcasts and whatnot, well, you would want to promote products that would help them do that. You would include those kinds of products on your site where customers can click on and possibly even buy these products. Because one thing, when they click on and they buy these products, you get a share of the profits from the affiliate sites. So blogging is great, and not just about the money, but the good thing about blogging is that you can share your passion with the world, really. Because you think about the internet, when you do things on the internet, be it writing, if you're doing YouTube video, if you're podcasting, or whatever it is that you might be doing on the internet in a creative way, this is being shared worldwide. It's not just limited to the city you live in, the state, or even the United States itself. It's global. And again, this is what we call the World Wide Web. They don't call it that for nothing. And so that's the beauty of that with blogging. You get to share your platform with the whole world. Because what you're doing is you're building a it depends on your purpose for blogging. You could possibly just build a brand, an entire brand around blogs. People have done that and succeeded. So blogging is another good side hustle. And there's so many others here that I'm thinking about right now. And speaking of YouTube, you can start a YouTube channel. Now, I know nowadays the some people have complained about YouTube's restrictions. Now that the restrictions have gotten even tighter, but this is not to say that it's impossible for you to succeed or even earn a sizable income, a side hustle style income on YouTube. It's just a matter of putting out consistent videos and looking for creative ways for it to be monetized and just getting creative with growing your audience day by day. And of course, make sure that the content of your videos is just right. You want to hook your audience. And if you go to YouTube, there are tons of videos from those who are very experienced in this, and they can take you through a whole tutorial of not only how to get started with YouTube and all the basics of setting up the account and so on, but they have a ton of tools of the trade that you can use so that you can get started with YouTube and build that channel and grow your audience to the point where you just might be able to replace your day job with doing YouTube. There are people who have done it, and so that's another side hustle idea that could possibly become a full-time hustle, depending on how hard you work, how dedicated you are, and the quality of the videos that you put out on your YouTube channel. And also, there's surveys. Now, I have earned a small income, a small side hustle style income from surveys. So surveys definitely won't get you a full-time income. Obviously, a lot of times it's not enough for you to replace your day job with, but it does make for a good side hustle for those lean times when you don't get paid for another few days and you're in need of maybe an extra $50 or $20, $30. You're in need of a little extra cash that can tie you over for that week, for a snack or clothes or some things that you wanted to get to play around money, as I like to call it. The survey sites are they're doing surveys are a good source of side hustle money, depending on how many days you spend doing the surveys, the time that you had to commit to that kind of work. It can be tedious, I will say. Of all the different side hustles that I've done, I found the survey sites to be boring at times and tedious. Just not all that fun, with the exception of some surveys. But overall, it has helped me. When I was in need of some emergency cash, I would go to
to my go-to survey site, which I still like this site. I haven't been on it in a while, but this is a site that I really enjoy, and that's Survey Junkie. That's my favorite survey site. So for those, so if you're looking for a really good survey site where you can do nice surveys that won't take you any time, may seem tedious, but it won't take you really hardly any time to do, and you want to earn a good deal of side hustle money, and you need that cash for emergencies. Survey Junkie, in my opinion, is one of the best survey sites out there of all the ones that I've tried. And so I would say Survey Junkie. Every once in a while, I do Inbox Dollars, but I'm not as crazy about that one too much. I tried it a few times, but it's one of my least favorite survey sites for earning extra money. So I would say Survey Junkie, in my opinion, is one of the best. And of course, I mentioned freelance writing. And while I'm on the topic of freelance writing, there's a site that I want to talk about. And actually, I'm currently writing with this site. It's a site that I've been working with for about maybe 1 or 2 years now. I discovered it from by doing research and trying to find a new site, because I was no longer happy with Upwork. Oh, by the way, I would not recommend Upwork for trying to do a side hustle. The clients, a lot of times they pay too low for their writing, for your writing. They want to offer you low prices, and a lot of times they don't pay you on time. I just did not have the best experience with Upwork as far as writing goes. So no, I would not recommend Upwork. But there's this one site that I found to be pretty consistent with the writing as far as writing assignments go, and I've had too much trouble with them. And this website is hirewriters.com. That's HIRE writers.com. And I'll say over the past 1 or 2 years, I've been using hirewriters.com. They have been pretty consistent with the assignments. I haven't had too many issues with the clients. They pay you, you get timely payments. I don't have to worry about waiting 1 or 2 weeks before I get a payment. If you sign on to work with Hire Writers, I'm just going to explain how the site works, because I do like it and I've been doing pretty good with it. So I'll explain how it works. What you do is you'll sign up for an account. What you do is you go to hirewriters.com, and then you will sign on. You sign up as a writer, and then after that, once you do that, you click on Find Jobs, and there's gonna be what we writers call it, an assignment queue. So basically, what that is a list of available assignments from different clients, and then you click on and you look at the requirements. And you will just claim those assignments. You can claim up to 10 within a certain period of time. You can claim up to 10, at least 10. They don't give you any. You're not allowed to claim more than 10 at once, but the limit is 10. And there's a combination of assignments with long word counts, short word counts, a variety of topics. And the clients will leave clear instructions for you, and as far as how they want it structured, where they want certain keywords and whatnot. And so once you do that, you claim the article, and they give you a deadline. In general, the assignments that I've done with hirewriters.com, my deadline would be at least a day, the next day. Now, sometimes you may come across assignments where it will be due in 3 or 4 days, sometimes 12 hours. I've come across assignments like that where the deadline was a few hours rather than a whole day. So there's even a variety in the deadlines as well as the word length, I mean word count length rather, and the topics and the types of clients. So far, I will give that site good review. I had no issues with hirewriters.com. Once again, that's HIRE writers.com, and that's a site that I've been using. That has really been my go-to site for freelance writing, because I turned to that site because I was just fed up with Upwork. I was just tired of Upwork. I had too many problems with them, so that's when I went over to hirewriters.com. So for freelance writing, Hire Writers is a really good site for that, and for freelance writing, and to see what other kind. And there are many other types of there's also just all kinds of different side hustles.
If you're good at doing hair, you can style hair for different people in the neighborhood, for friends, and it could be co-workers, and just earn cash that way. People have done that. They did where they style hair, I'll style hair from their houses. So that's another way to do it. Or if you're a barber, it's the same thing. You can cut hair from inside your house, and get people, have people come and do that. And that'd be, your weekend warrior work right there. And so there are a ton of ways to do a side hustle so you can earn extra money, so you won't have to walk inside of payday loan center and have to get tangled up with loan sharks like them. It's not a good thing. And here, and I'm just mentioning some different ways that you can break free from that, or if you've been in that cycle, how you can break free from that for good. And as I mentioned, the side hustles, having an emergency fund. And also, another way to do this is to spend less than what you earn. Just living within or even below your means. Now, of course, this is not talking about, this is minus the necessary bills that you have to pay, such as rent or your mortgage. Then there's cable, if you have that, the utilities, like, and the water, all your necessary bills. I'm talking about minus that. I'm talking about once. What I'm talking about is once all your important bills are paid, whatever's left over, you want to spend less than whatever's left from after you pay your main bills. Because you want to make sure that you have, and you want to make sure you have some emergency funds. So once you get your check and you pay all of your main bills, it's also a good idea to take some of that money that's left over, put it to our saving every pay period. And then after that, you can look at groceries. And maybe a number of other things. If you have children, they have different needs. Maybe they might need new clothes. They might, it just a number of different things. And I would just do some budgeting and see, after all the bills were paid, and set aside things for emergencies, as far as emergency fund. In what ways can I? I would this how like this how I would do it. Just how can I? In what ways can I cut out any unnecessary expenses so that I can live within my means, or even below my means if possible? What can I sacrifice that I really don't need so that I won't have to walk into a payday loan center, so that I can have some kind of financial stability? That's the approach that I like to have when it comes to my income. And I'll just share an example of that. This past week, I was basically out of work for about a week. There wasn't too much work that needed to be done. An emergency took place, so I was out of work for a good while. But I still had my other side hustle, and that helped me. It just tied me over until things smoothed over with the other job that I have, and it actually worked out. And so, because just yesterday I was able to get some groceries and some things that we needed. And so that goes back to what I was saying, having an emergency fund, having a side hustle, and spending less than you earn. I really believe that those with those three methods, you can at least rely, not rely as much on a payday lenders, if not avoid them altogether. I understand the times when it really gets bad, where you might have to walk in a place like that, but as far as I just believe that it's good to avoid it altogether if possible, because I'm aware of just how the lenders operate with the high fees and the interest rates, service fees, and just a number of fees plus the actual loan. And all of that adds up, and it just takes a chunk out of your income. I remember when I was little, my parents had to use payday loans for a while. Now, it wasn't too frequent, but every once in a while that would happen, because my mom would send me to the payday loan center to pay off the loan that she had made. And it can take a chunk out of your check. It really could. And so that's why in this segment, I just wanted to
help get the listeners out a little bit, help you a little bit, and just mention some ways where you can, where you won't have to rely on these loan sharks as much. Because this is how loan sharks make their money. That's how they get rich. This is how they do it, by taking advantage of those who are in a bad place financially, temporarily. And it would be a lot better if all of us, not just to you, my listeners, but I'm saying this even for myself, because I have to remind myself of this, because I don't like, I just don't, as I mentioned in the first segment, I just hate it when people are taken advantage of, not only financially, but in any way. It's not a good feeling. I don't just like to be taken advantage of. It's not good. And I just don't want that for you guys. I don't want that for you. I want you to be financially free. I want you to not have to depend on predatory lenders who don't care about your financial well-being. And I just want you to be empowered, and I want you to be financially free. I want you to be wise about finances, and I just want to be there for you guys, because I mean, right now my grandmother is in a situation where, now with the reverse mortgage, we're not sure, she's not sure what's gonna happen with her house, and now she's in more debt, and I've seen this firsthand now. So that is what motivated me to come on tonight and discuss my heart on this, and to possibly help others, because I don't like that kind of injustice, and especially if it's economic injustice, done to certain groups of people, the disabled, or especially, children, the elderly, women, minorities, immigrant communities. It's when economic injustice is committed against them, I don't like it. And that is just one of the reasons why I just wanted to come on tonight and share my thoughts, and possibly help others avoid these loan sharks, and so they won't have to walk into these traps that they set up for a lot of us. Because we don't have to take it. We don't have to settle for their breadcrumbs, which is really altogether, which are really scams. In reality, they're really scams. And with that said, I believe I said all I wanted to say. I know a lot of what I talked about tonight was a combination of rant, helping, and giving research. So it was a little bit of everything tonight. And hopefully everyone enjoyed themselves tonight. And I welcome your feedback, questions, comments on anything that I discussed tonight. And that concludes it. I'm getting ready to go to bed and join my little girl, and getting a good night's sleep. Everyone, have a blessed night.